to share her experience, strength, and hope with us, we have Allie.
Hi, I'm Allie. I'm an alcoholic. So I want to thank Sydney for asking me to speak tonight and for Frankie for chairing the meeting. I'm really excited and very nervous. This was one of the first meetings I came to in like the first couple weeks of my sobriety, and I think it was the first time I had been in a place full of my peers, and everyone was sober. I mean, my college classes didn't have, you know, a class size this big. So, as you can imagine, it was really overwhelming. And if anyone's feeling overwhelmed, that's normal for me. So I just want to tell you a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So I grew up with a mom and dad who pretty much hated each other, and it was a really tense household. And both were alcoholics, and both were alcoholic in different ways. My mom was a very the quiet alcoholic, where she would just drink a lot of vodka or a lot of wine and then pass out on the couch, or just kind of lock herself in her room. And my dad was the rageful alcoholic who would be quiet, and then all of a sudden burst. And I say this not because I think it makes me an alcoholic, but because it shaped my story. From a very young age, I had the feeling that I was wrong somehow, that like I came out wrong, that I was fundamentally wrong. And so in order to reverse that, I wanted to be perfect. So I'm alcoholic, but I'm also a perfectionist. And that kind of put me in this really painful position of wanting to be obliterated and also wanting to be like completely anal retentive. And so I was stuck in the middle. And I remember around, I think, 13, I really was conscious of the feeling of my skin like being too tight. Like I just felt like I was trapped somehow in this body. And what I kind of want to talk about tonight is this feeling of freedom that I have being sober and working the steps, because drinking was a prison, and just living a life that involved alcohol felt very much like a prison, because I just wasn't given the how-to manual that I felt like everyone else had. So yeah, around 13, that's when I really started having suicidal thoughts. I felt very like apart from always, and I felt that since I was very young. But that's kind of when it, you know, like 13, I feel like is a very awkward age. And that's really when, you know, my awkwardness hit its stride. And going into high school, you know, the summer before, I decided that I would never drink, I would never smoke, I would never do drugs. And all that went out the window in a couple weeks. And all of my friends were doing it. And, you know, I wanted to be a part of. I wanted to feel loved, and I wanted to feel included. And this was kind of the peak of my parents' fighting, and it was a very abusive household. My dad was physically, verbally, and sexually abusive to me, and was physically abusive to my mom. And again, I say this because it was just, it shaped the way I drank. Because it caused me a lot of shame, and so that shame carried with me, you know, throughout my life, and you know, until now, I'm happy to say. But Yeah, so my first drink was 14. I think it was a Smirnoff Ice. It wasn't the, you know, coming home that I hear a lot of people talk about. I think I was, like, so caught up with, like, yeah, everyone's doing it, oh, I just did it, you know, and, and you know, immediately it was drinking, it was sex, it was drugs, and, you know, for me, sex went hand in hand with drinking. I just didn't think, like, I don't know, it was the same thing for me, and I lost whatever dignity I thought I had, and I once heard in a meeting that this woman shared that her drinking was like Russian roulette, and that's very true for me. I didn't know if I would pick up a drink and it would just be one, or if I would wake up the next morning and have no idea what happened. And this is something that I feel makes me apart from in the rooms of AA, just because I don't hear that very often. So I like to share it in case there's someone out there that maybe their drinking was like that too. You know, because I like to think that I'm terminally unique. I like to think that I don't belong here, that I have something that's unfixable, and that I don't relate to, you know, any of you guys. But the truth of the matter is that to qualify here, right, the third tradition states that we have a desire to stop drinking. And, you know, it wasn't so much a desire to stop drinking that brought me into the rooms. It was just this, like, little glimmer of hope that maybe I could have a different life. You know, my years at high school were just kind of marked by depression and getting obliterated and being perfect, or, you know, my idea of perfection, which was achieving great grades, having a lot of friends, but it caused me such anxiety. Like, I just wanted to be alone. Like, I wanted to be alone in a room, maybe in my bed, you know, and you know, shut the shades and never let anyone in, because I was just so scared of everyone. And so, you know, I really didn't realize what drinking did until I kind of realized that I just couldn't connect with people without it. And that was around my senior year of high school. It was probably one of the happiest years of my life because I felt the most a part of, because I was surrounded by people who drank like me and who wanted to party just as much as I did. And then I got to college and it all changed, and things got even darker. And I drank with people who were, like, I went to a college in New Jersey where it was, I think, 99% people from New Jersey, so I immediately felt apart from, you know, and so there was that feeling again that, like, I couldn't fit in, that we didn't like the same things, and because if we don't like the same things, then we can't be friends, we can't connect, et cetera, et cetera. And so immediately this fear overwhelmed me, and I fell in with a group of guys who just drank a lot, and you know, one of the things that I said would never happen was, you know, missing class, was failing classes, stuff like that. And again, like, that just, those standards just went out the window. And we would, like, not even do any, it just, like, sit and drink whiskey and play Halo, like, all day. Yeah. You know, and I was so scared of Halo. Like, but I did it because I wanted to be a part of this group, and I tried to make myself like certain music to be a part of this group, to, you know, like not showering, to like do all those things. And and I remember very clearly being on the train home at the end of freshman year and just not recognizing who I was anymore. Like I was an actor. And these people who I was around had no idea who I was. And I didn't have any idea who I was. I remember having a very clear sense of that when I was in high school. But, you know, I had lost all of that. So I somehow managed to, like, separate myself from that group. And again, like, it just, no matter what group I fell into, I still never felt like I was a part of them, and I still drank to kind of drown that feeling, that anxiety and that fear. And I just, you know, I really, like, my dignity went out the window. And, you know, yeah. So I was very depressed. I really didn't see a point in living like that. And I, you know, I don't know. These details to me are kind of insignificant, because really what I wanted to do at that point in my life was to just have, like, endless supply of whiskey, cigarettes, and just my room. And I was really trapped in that feeling. You know, I loved to write, and I just couldn't write. And, you know, I loved to do all these things, and I couldn't, and I did not feel free. And again, like, that feeling, like, my skin was too tight. And so I graduated college, and again, it was very dark, and I kept looking for things to fix the darkness, to fix me. You know, it would be my birthday, it would be Christmas, it would be Valentine's Day, any day that maybe was special for other people could fix me, or I could find my answer there. And with other things too, like, I thought yoga would fix me, I thought finding a religion would fix me, just anything. And, like, I was totally atheist, so, like, I would try and force myself to believe in something I didn't believe in. And I graduated school, and I was living at home with my dad and my mom. You know, they had gotten a divorce, and she had moved, and it was a really miserable point. And that's when I tried to stop drinking, because drinking had stopped working for me. And I didn't realize that drinking had stopped working. I had no idea what happened, but I would drink, and I would no longer feel this sense of peace, that I would no longer feel out of body, comfortable in my skin. But I would feel worse. I would feel sad, and I would feel really jealous, and I just wanted to... It was just not a good feeling. And that's, you know, part of why I mentioned my perfectionism is because I really, drugs were not part of my story. You know, my first couple attempts at trying to smoke weed, it just got me in my head, and I had no idea why people would want to be in their head. I wanted to be out of my head. And I also thought that since drinking, I thought, was so acceptable, if I was a drug addict, then I would not be perfect and therefore wrong. So drinking was it for me. And suddenly it had stopped working, and I kind of felt like the rug had been pulled out from under me. And I was left in this place of, okay, I can't drink, but I can't connect with people. I can't belong to something. And I just had no tools. I had absolutely no tools, and it felt very much like a prison. You know, I was at my dad's apartment, and again, like I had said, he was very abusive, and there wasn't the physical abuse anymore, but there was still a lot of boundary crossing, and I just thought that was okay, that I deserved that, and that I was a bad daughter. And then I would make him co-sign contracts with me that I wouldn't drink, because I didn't know how to stop, and I tried that a bunch, and it still didn't work. I still would have no intention of drinking, suddenly find myself at a bar, and then find myself, you know, the next morning passed out in front of my apartment door, or in the bathroom, or... you know, somewhere in my room with, like, fully dressed with lots of night clothes, and yeah, it just wasn't pretty. And people started to get their lives together after college. You know, they started to stopped partying as hard. They started to stop drinking and getting jobs, and I kind of I felt very left behind. My sobriety date is October 31st, 2011. I think that I really loved Halloween because it was a chance for me to really get out of myself and embody another person. And I loved it too much. I partied way too hard. And then the next night, I just had one glass of wine, and I told my friend, like, I think I need to go to AA. And she said, that's very dramatic. she fully supports me now, footnote. But my mom has been sober for almost 9 years, I think, and she never pushed AA on me. You know, I would hear, like, I would see the Serenity Prayer taped to our fridge or something, or, you know, she would always say, like, be true to yourself or stuff like that. Like, I heard, you know, some of what we talk about in these rooms, but she never pushed it on me, and she always said when I would call her, like, after blackout, like, I can't do this anymore, she'd be like, well, if you ever want to come to a meeting, just let me know. And so I called her that day, or the morning after, and said, I really need to go to a meeting. And, so she had taken me to East Meets West. I don't know if anyone's been there, but it was very small. It was a lot of people who were much older than me, who had kids, who their stories were very different from mine. And I kind of, I sobbed throughout the entire meeting, I think, because I was just so relieved to feel somewhere where it was safe to let all that out. But I really didn't identify until one woman said that she felt like all of her feelings were caught in her throat, and that's exactly how I felt at that moment. And so it brought me back to my next meeting, and it was a young people's meeting, and I'm so glad that they exist, because it was such a relief to see people that, like, I felt like I belonged to, and they were sober, and they were doing this, and they were around my age, because none of my friends were sober or are sober, you know, who are not in this program. And I met my first sponsor there, and I immediately, she started, you know, taking me through the steps. And I really am so grateful that she took me through them quickly, because I was able to see how much I needed this program, and the promises started to work for me. I mean, I immediately felt this relief of like just the letting go of the shame and anxiety that I had, that I carried around with me, like a physical weight on my shoulders every day. And I kind of just, I don't know where it went. And sometimes it comes back, but most of the time it's just gone. And I don't know how that happened. But getting sober was breaking this cycle that I was trapped in my entire life. And today, God, my life looks so different. I still feel like I'm living someone else's life. It's beyond my wildest dreams. So I have a lot of really great external stuff, you know. You know, I feel financially secure. I'm in a relationship with someone I love very dearly, and I have an apartment and a job I love. But that's not what sobriety has given me. I mean, granted, sobriety has given me those things, but I decided, or I felt at some point, I came to realize that I wasn't wrong, that I was a human, and that I deserve these things just as much as I thought my friends and family deserved them. And because I was able to get honest, and honesty, I think, is one of the tools to freedom. You know, I think in the big book it talks about, you know, when we do our steps and we do our fifth step and our ninth step, you know, we're building this archway that we can walk a free man or woman. And that I felt that. I remember doing my fifth step with my sponsor. I told her things that I had never told anyone else, things that I thought, you know, were like the gross, like, bugs under my skin type of things. And she just listened, you know, a lot of the time. She said, me too, or wait, I've done worse, or, you know, or just, or even just shared stories of her friends that had gone through that. And it just, the magical words of me too, you know, and when you tell something really shameful to someone, they say, oh, me too. And suddenly you're like, it's just, you're released from that. And again, like, I carried shame with me everywhere I went. And yeah, so the fifth step was like cleaning the gutter, and suddenly the water could flow free. Where are these metaphors coming from? I swear I'm a writer. But really, I mean, it was like something came unblocked, you know? It was like the Drano to my pipe. oh, God. So, yeah, I mean, after doing my fifth step, I really could see the change in my life. and, you know, I heard in a meeting recently that... we have a program that gives us the opportunity for limitless expansion, and I love that because, again, like I said, like drinking the cycle of things just not changing, that thinking that something's going to make it change and it not changing, that is such a prison, that's a cage, and it was for me. And this is just... this is just the road to freedom, and that I don't feel like I'm trapped in my skin anymore. I feel like, okay, so the options that were laid out for me, you know, going insane, going to jail, going to prison, and then something I, again, heard in a meeting recently was just living a mediocre life, you know, and I think that was my road. I think that... I could have made it, you know, maybe another decade or so, maybe even the rest of my life, but it would have been really miserable, you know, it would have been really miserable. And today, oh God, it sounds so cheesy, but I feel like I can kind of do anything, that already I've done so much. Anyway, sorry. Yeah, so that's... sobriety has given me this new outlook, and it has allowed me to reconnect with what's important in this life, and for me, that's being honest, that's helping someone else, and I think that's it for me. Thank you.